Hello, this is Eric Estep. I wanted to let you know before we get started that the podcast today will be jumping in on a previously recorded conversation. So it was cut in the middle. The episode you heard last time was the first part, and this will be the second part. So we just jump in into the middle of the conversation. So it might sound a little bit weird, but I want to let you know that's what we're doing and how we're doing it. And in the future, we're trying to keep things at a digestible around 20, 30 minutes or so. So that's the kind of length we're shooting for, and we'll try to do that in the future. Thanks.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of City on a Hill, a podcast about what it means to be a citizen of heaven and a citizen of the United States. Your hosts are Eric Estep and Scott Reevely, two pastors who found people in their church unable to talk to one another about politics in this last election cycle. This podcast is our attempt to do something about that. We want to encourage Christians to find their tribe in the church and their hope in the kingdom of God, rather than to seek both in the kingdom of man. So with that, let's get to it today.
The 50s, the fight with communism is in full swing, the Cold War, and 60s, and we all know that 60s, one of the big things that happened was the civil rights struggle. A lot of the Civil Rights Act, there was a Civil Rights Act, I think, in 1957, but a lot of that struggle was in the 60s. And how did church and state come together? What was the conflict in the 60s?
Well, you know, I think there is... part of our conversation here is, you know, when were the good old days? And, you know, I think for some, the 50s and 60s were high times, people might say, for the church, when we're rebuilding from the war and suburbs were coming into vogue and the nuclear family was, you know, maybe stronger than it ever been. And then there's this thing about race that, could have been led by the church that does seem to have a moral component to it. And I suppose it's far too gracious to say it was a mixed bag, but it ended up being a bag where the white church was less involved and the black church did essentially what they could. And it was, it'd be hard to say that was the good old days for the vision that Jesus has for people of every tribe and language and nation and essentially ethnicity to be part of his kingdom. That got, in some respect, glossed over. And I don't know that I have much more to say about that, except that, there was an attempt, I think, by a lot of the leaders were reverends, you know, people that led the civil rights movement, because there were some moral implications, but the fact that it lacked traction, I think, in some respect is part because the church didn't engage that particular issue like they did some others. Mm. So.
Well, I think as far as the good old days conversation, it's a lot in argumentation as well. If things were like it was in the 50s or the 60s, we'd be in a good spot. And in reality, that doesn't take into account a lot of the facts on the ground. Things were not ideal. Things were not, justice did not reign. Yeah. Justice and righteousness was not exemplified. And that's what the church should want. Yeah. And to look back on those days and go, oh, that's ideal. That's what we're trying to get back to. Not true.
I mean, speaking of non-ideal, you have at the end of the 60s, you have your Vietnam War, and your the church, there were Christian reasons on both sides to get out of the war and to be in the war. And it did have to do with this communist threat and other things that, it was just a funny time, I think, for the church to try and articulate, you know, how does God want us as a nation to be involved? And there was this back and forth, even on the on that issue of the Vietnam War. And it wasn't clear, really, which I don't think to the church, where they ought to be. So there was another 60s issue there. I think if you go to the 70s, you know, you got early in the 70s, you got Roe v. Wade in 70, is it 73?
73, yeah, the Supreme Court decision that basically protects the ability to get an abortion. That happened in 1973, yeah.
You know, and that was a little different. I mean, because then there had been, prior to that, I think there'd been a nascent pro-life, you know, movement or thought in the church that God cares about life. But that really did rally people to, you know, again, the good versus evil, black against white, not races, but just, you know, light and darkness in that issue. And that's been a political issue ever since that has galvanized the church. And even to this day, you know, I mean, I think I mentioned last time, we had somebody leave our church just in, what, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, over this issue, because I didn't do it right on that, you know. So yeah, it's still an issue for the church.
So yeah, Roe v. Wade is a catalyst that really brings together maybe a bunch of those disparate denominations or parts of the church that Billy Graham was probably trying to bring together and have all in the same place. This is one of those events that brings a lot of that together, and not just an issue, but then becomes a potential political voting block, which in 1979, you have Jerry Falwell put together the Moral Majority,
which I just have to say about that. Turns out that was the same month I graduated from high school. I didn't realize that until I looked it up. So there you go. Now I date myself.
Now everyone knows.
Yeah. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
No, that's fine. So the Moral Majority is, you may have heard of, Richard Nixon would talk about the silent majority. He assumed that there was this majority in the country that maybe wouldn't talk a bunch, but would all agree, would all vote the same direction. And Jerry Falwell took that. He was a pastor, and he said, basically, he assumed that there was a coalition of people that agreed with Judeo-Christian values, Judeo-Christian traditions, and we can be more, or we can be a political force in the country. And one of the things he did was he made an organization which allowed him to be free of the tax regulations around being a 501c3 or a church, and he could do direct political advocacy, which again makes church and politics, makes those things, it's hard to know which forum are we sitting in? What are we talking about?
Mm-hmm. And you know, who has jurisdiction here? Mm. Is it, you know, is it going to be Jesus? Is it going to be the next president? I mean, that's it's super interesting that the Moral Majority was very influential in getting Ronald Reagan elected over Jimmy Carter, who, you know, was the, you know, the born again president. That was one of the things that when he was elected, he, you know, he talked about being born again. And then, but the Moral Majority came out in favor of Reagan. So anyway, it was kind of interesting.
Again, with the research on Falwell and the Moral Majority, I heard the tones that I often hear now in church when we're talking about voting or we're talking about what stance we're supposed to take. He was known for saying it's sinful not to vote. And I did that politics class at the beginning of 2020, and I was advocating for, if there's not an appropriate person to vote for, then don't vote. Do the other races, do the other things. And I heard that same type of thing. Like it's sinful to not exert your responsibility or exert your right to vote. Another thing he said was, We need to get people saved, baptized, and registered to vote, which again,
wow,
puts those, you're putting registered to vote on par with getting saved or being baptized. The two things that, that is involved with Jesus. And then you have this thing that's involved with being part of a democratic republic. Mm-hmm. They don't belong together.
Yeah. It was interesting that, you know, during the 80s when the Cold War essentially ended, when the Berlin Wall came down and, at the end of the 80s, he said, we have succeeded and we no longer, the moral majority is no longer needed. And in 1989, they ended that. But it was kind of interesting that that coincided really with the really clear enemy kind of going away. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that is of interest to me, because there was so much inflammatory talk even this last year that if, you know, America is going to end if, so-and-so gets, if Biden gets elected, and it's going to end if Trump gets elected. I mean, it was like, so binary. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think that's when the church is probably the most vulnerable to getting enmeshed, is when they see that the stakes are high and it appears that this is, that my involvement in politics is the way, there's a lever I need to pull, or that's my only lever, let me say it that way. Mm. So anyway, but it is very interesting that it ends, the moral majority ends when the Cold War ends. So
that is interesting. I didn't know that. Well, and I hear in that there's a tribalism to us versus them. And if we don't have an obvious external focus of our tribalism, mm-hmm. it's going to be an internal focus, which is pretty interesting that's kind of what's going on. The enemies in the house, as it were, that's the focus people tend to have. And this is probably a conversation for another day, but we were talking about people throwing the word socialism around. That seems to try to get the same old enemy of communism. If I can attach this way, then all the intensity is back, all of the danger is back, and we can get the coalition back together and point it in a direction we know.
That is really an interesting observation. Yeah, I'll have to think about that. I think the other thing that, so in that respect, I mean, we're moving kind of through time, right? And the 90s were less interesting for, you know, the evangelical church and the, you know, political power in some respect, because Clinton was president. And you've got, you know, and there was a sense in which the enemy became him, you know, I mean, to the, his moral failings, shall we say, were, fodder for, again, countless pulpits and countless Christian condemnations, you know, but in some respect, the church was on the outside during that time, only just kind of chiming in. And I think it's just interesting to me, because I think about the his, you might say, moral indiscretions and our most recent president's moral indiscretions and the church's response to both had as much to do with the leverage the church thought it had in those periods of time as it, you know, it had more to do with it than the actual moral integrity of either one of those men, which is that's again, this is kind of why it's a problem. This is kind of why we got to talk about it, because we, you know, it, part of it, sure, is about policy. Part of it is, you know, that, but part of it is about how does the church relate to the state when this, you know, when they're in power, when they're out of power, when they're, you know, how do they relate to it? So anyway,
we jumped over the rest of the 80s. I think one thing worth mentioning is Reagan's oft used phrase "city on a hill," which I don't know if you know this, but that's Jesus's phrase.
There you go.
And when Jesus said it, he was not referring to the United States of America; he was referring to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, not just Reagan of presidents used it. Kennedy used it. Most modern presidents have used it, mm-hmm. because in general, Americans like to see themselves as something exceptional, something different, mm-hmm. something that the world can look at. But I what I find most interesting about that is that it's a metaphor explicitly for the church that America has co-opted. And again, it's kind of like in God We Trust. If I don't get really specific on what we're talking about as a Christian, I can go, oh yeah, city on a hill. I know that phrase. Of course, America is a city on a hill. Of course, yeah. Those things are connected.
And there is a sense, in all fairness, in which America is exceptional. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful it is, and I'm thankful I live here. But the language, again, the religious language there, mm-hmm. is part of what I think is magnetic for the church to drift, like say, oh, this is where we're going to be. We need to be in politics. We need to have influence and power as this city on the hill. And we fail to see, I think, the different nature of the church versus the state and the different ways the church operates than the state operates. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. Did anything happen in the 2000s?
You know, it's funny. It seems like I remember being a kid better than I remember the 90s and the 2000s. But yeah, there's always 9/11, right? And that there was a, you know, outpouring of all kinds of prayer meetings and things right after that. And, you know, I don't know how many churches saw sustained results from that event. As far as the church goes. But the interesting thing about that was it wasn't like the Cold War, where the Cold War had a real clear enemy, a real clear and present danger. And this was, you didn't know where the next terrorist was going to strike. You didn't know what this was going to be like. And so it wasn't as galvanizing for the church, and there wasn't the same temptation. I think there was a temptation in that we had, you know, again, the same scrutiny on presidents. Is the person born again? Does he have a testimony? How's he going to be with religious freedom and different things that, you know, you probably questions you should ask, but it wasn't as galvanizing as it was in the 70s and 80s when we had, you know, the Cold War going on, I don't think.
Hmm. Did you notice anything with our church specifically, 2001? Any influx of people looking for bigger answers, or?
Well, you know, not really. I mean, we had a couple of prayer meetings. I don't know that we had a lot of people wander in or anything. There was a little bit. It was a little bit of wake up call, because in some respect, we'd had about a decade almost that was pretty quiet. I mean, there'd been the Iraq War before that, but or the Gulf, I forget how they called it. I forget which is which. Sorry about that. But, you know, there had been something in the early 90s, but Yeah, it'd been a little bit quiet. And so the, you know, it was a wake up call. And I think some people did ask spiritual questions, you know, largely in the fact just that there was a fair amount of death and people had to come to grips with that. So there were spiritual questions being asked, but it, you know, as far as it being a issue on the right or an issue on the left or an invitation for the church to step into the public square, it wasn't in the same way. I don't think.
I was in high school in September of 2001. And I remember after that, the villain in TV shows were typically Islamic extremists of some sort. Whereas in the 80s or the 90s, typically the bad guys were
Ivan
Russians.
Drago.
Exactly. Yes. I've seen Rocky IV.
Is there a better movie in the whole world, right?
Maybe another discussion.
Maybe not, yeah.
But again, like, not exactly the same, but like the Cold War, there's an us versus them thing. And I'm wondering if there was a level of congregating around the flag and congregating around Christianity in some not explicit way, not specific way, because it was us versus them again. Does that ring a bell at all? I was in high school, so I get out of this question.
Yeah, I mean, in some respect, it wasn't so much. And again, if we're talking about the entanglement here, mm-hmm. I think there were religious questions being asked because, yes, the, you know, Islamic extremists were a different religion.
Mm-hmm.
There were national questions being asked, but they weren't near as clear because it wasn't a nation state that was, you know, exactly against us. And so there wasn't quite the commingling of those two questions that there was, that I remember anyway, as a kid in the, you know, in the Cold War. So, you know, and I think there was in some respect an expectation that Christians would be more gracious to Muslims than, say, Americans would have been to Russians in the 80s and 90s.
Hmm.
You know, so it was a little different that way.
That's interesting. Well, that basically brings us mostly to the present. I'm sure there's plenty we could talk about, and I'm sure we could keep going on with this for quite a while. But I think that's good enough for today. So we'll hold off and we'll wait for the next time we talk. I want to remind everyone to not to forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us. We'd love to get some 5-star ratings. If you don't like what you're doing, stay subscribed, but just don't worry about rating us. It's going to be fine. If you have questions, send them to podcast@newlifenw.com. We'd love to hear what your questions are. They could probably fuel future conversations, and they're welcome for sure. But with that, we look forward to the next conversation.